This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. CJ is with me tonight.
That's a new name.
Christopher John.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
DV, or AV, I guess. I'm doing fine, sir. Doing fine. Driving in the dark. It's a new thing.
Yeah, you know, I noticed it coming over here today. I was like, wow, where am I?
It really was. Why am I driving here at this point of the day?
Yeah, really.
This part of the week.
You know, it was very interesting. But anyway, we had an interesting day in the stock markets today, and we've got the perfect guest to address what's happening in the markets.
Yeah, the last 12 hours were pretty interesting for markets. Actually, the last 18 hours between the futures, what happened, and then what happened in the market today. It's great to have our repeat guest, Niall O'Malley, with us.
Niall O'Malley, and we don't have a bio on you now, so why don't you tell us, who are you? You've been here before, so you can just tell everybody again.
Sure. I work in Towson with Blue Point Investment Management, a firm I founded 10 years ago. Focuses on active management, individual security selection. If you look at the investment as a checking account, it's not a good fit. But if you look at it as something for education or retirement, it's a very strong fit. The focus is capital appreciation over time and seeking sustainable growth.
But one of the things about you now that's really cool about having you on tonight is you're probably one of the greatest historians on investments, markets, and just history in general and how it affects markets and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like, you know, I've been reading a paper that you wrote recently, you know, about history of markets and here in Baltimore. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But, you know, so what happened today? You said you woke up at, what, 2:30, and the U.S. stock market was down on the futures that people were betting, and it was down how much?
It was quite dramatic. We hit the triggers that restrict volatility. We hit 8% off.
Down 8%.
And
not all of our listeners are as attuned with the word. So we're down 8%.
And there was a period of uncertainty because the campaign chairman Podesta said there wasn't going to be a declaration tonight, and then there was a question about succession. And it immediately rolled over into the markets. And that was actually very powerful. And then after there was an announcement and a concession, the markets came back. And then later in the morning, around 6:30, we were only down 2.5% relative to
the
major indexes.
The market even opened, it was down to only like a 0.3 down. And on it went from there. And I think the market was up 2% at one time during the day, something in that range.
It varied across the day, but, you know, most of the indexes followed up on a little bit over 1%.
Yeah. But here was the most fascinating thing about today, and that was the bond market. I've been in this industry for 35 years, and I've seen moves of interest rates larger than the move in interest rates today. But percentage-wise, considering how low we are, to go from 1.82 or 3 up to 2.06 in one day is, I've never seen it. I've never seen that big a move in the bond market in one day.
It was extremely powerful. You know, the 10-year moved over 11% on a price-level basis, a 10-year treasury. And, you know, mortgages and many other things are priced off that. It's very, very significant. It's negative for utilities, which are basically a fixed income or a proxy fixed income aspect of the market. So it's we're in a real period of change. I had actually thought we may have market softness, but I think what happened is the market very quickly, many participants said, you know what, we have somebody who is going to focus on spending, and we haven't had any investment of material nature lately, and it's actually been negative private investment. We've had marginally negative government investment as well, and so we've been in an absence of investment, and now there's a player there that has a huge interest in investment through stimulus, and you now have a draw for capital, and you saw that in the rates.
That's true, but you also had the situation where you have a control now between the House, the Senate, and the executive branch, all in the Republicans, not done since, what, 1928?
Yes.
You said? So, you know, you've got the Republican Party now can do what they want for the next 3 years, or 2 years, I'm sorry. Not necessarily carte blanche, because they could filibuster for 2 years.
Right.
But so, what, you know, what do you think is going to happen there?
I think you got to be very careful about the, you know, the do what you want mandate. You know, politics is compromised on both sides, and everybody needs to work together. But it was remarkable to hear part of Speaker Ryan's press conference today. He was absolutely crackling. You could hear somebody who has studied this with great detail. His efforts in the past were derailed by the fact that he included entitlements, which was turned out to be a third rail that was damaging to that efforts. And now he realizes there's a very powerful opportunity to negotiate growth and to bring back an enormous amount of capital, you know, almost $3 trillion.
Why don't you explain that? We've only got about a minute and a half until we have to take our first – well, actually, we only have about 30 seconds until we have to take our first pause. What do you mean by $3 trillion?
Well, we
have 30 seconds.
We have a lot of capital that's overseas with most all our large multinationals.
Mike's
hot. Because of low tax rates, and there's the opportunity to bring $3 trillion approximately back to this country.
Because if they actually brought it back, the U.S. would double tax it in essence.
Correct.
And that was the problem. So what corporation, Apple's got, you know, something like $50 billion overseas. Why would they bring that back to the United States if they're going to tax it again on them to bring it back?
Well, they've been looking for investments overseas. That's why one of the reasons, a driver for Microsoft to buy Nokia and other deals that have happened that are overseas, because they can use that capital that's overseas and not pay that 35% tax. And now there's potential to do tax reform and bring this capital back and create a stimulus that's greater than the stimulus that occurred in 2008 post the financial crisis.
Well, now you have to hold on with us, and we're going to come back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We'll talk more about what's going on, what to expect for the future. But right now, we have to take a pause. We're going to go to traffic. Be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Niall O'Malley, who's the founder and main proprietor of Blue Point Investment Management. And Niall's a great historian of the market, so not a better guest to have on a day like today.
Yeah.
So now, you know, the market, you know, had a reasonably good day today, but there were a lot of sectors that were actually clobbered. I mean, you know, you had a lot of index. You had almost as many new highs as you had new lows, and they were in the hundreds, like 150 new highs and 110 or 20 new lows. You don't normally see that if it's a bull market, but the market was reshuffling. Mm-hmm. These were winners. These were losers. Why were these winners, and what do you think are the losers? Why do you think these are the winners?
Well, specifically, if you look back to Hillary Clinton's initiatives in the early 90s with health care, there was a very strong stick that was used against the healthcare industry. And so there has been a broad sell-off of late in healthcare because of the
especially the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, there was an expectation that we were going to a price control system, not dissimilar to what you have in Canada and in Europe. And now I think there's a realization that that is not going to – there's going to be reset there. There's huge cost and expense there. So there are going to be changes, but it's not going to be draconian per se. The other area that was soft was consumer discretionary. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. You know, consumers pause. Consumers are the primary driver. You know, you have challenges with restaurants and other areas. You have healthcare expenses growing across the board. You have wage expenses growing. Your top line's not doing that great. People are not sure about what's happening politically. There's a lot of energy in the atmosphere politically. And so consumer discretionary was soft, but you had a lot of strength amongst the banks, because if interest rates go up, the banks will have more of a spread that they make off of their borrowing costs versus their lending costs. which is important to keep the financial sector afloat. You also had quite a bit of strength with the oil and commodities because there's an opportunity to further develop our natural resources here and become less dependent on the Middle East.
And you know he's also going to let export of energy more so than we've had before. But you also made an interesting comment before the show. You said that you know, you have to be fearful that China could use, you know, holding back electronics because we, you know, Apple's iPhones are all produced in China, right?
Yeah, I think we're at a period where the touch and the finesse will be above expectations from the incoming Trump administration. If I were them, my focus would be on locking up capital for stimulus, for infrastructure. For example, if you buy a building or you buy a house, you get pre-approved for a mortgage. I wouldn't be surprised if we hear talk about 30-year treasuries, $1 trillion issuance to supply all this. Once that's all put in place, and I would assume it would take at least the at a bare minimum the first half of next year to do that, I think you move into the area of trade issues. And I think that, you know, if I were to pick something outside of conflict in the world that could be very, very challenging to deal with, and I think it's going to be China, because China has a lot of aspirations. It's achieved a lot, but we have huge issues with intellectual property. You know, they don't respect intellectual property. There will actually are numerous cases widely documented where intellectual property is copied, then tweaked, and then referred to as a domestic standard, and they ask joint venture partners to, you know, pay for this domestic standard. Intellectual property was actually the product that the company brought to China. So it's quite a challenging situation. And then also there's expansion from a political perspective in the South China Sea. And, you know, if I were China and I wanted to drive a point home to the United States, I would kind of do something that would be the inverse of the Long Beach strikes. I would just, you know, the containers don't make it to the Shanghai port. And, you know, where do our electronics come from?
They all come from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big problem, you know. So so with the interest rates going higher, won't that have to require the stock market to rethink the current P.E. ratios that they're trading at?
Well,
to some degree? I mean, we're at sort of high end of the spectrum.
But if you look at financials, that's not the case. They're considerably below. You know, if you look at technology, yes, they are challenged. And if you're importing the technology, you have a China connection. Software is a little bit different. So it depends where you are in the system. There are parts of the market that are overvalued, I think, will sell off, and there are parts of the market that are undervalued that stand to appreciate. And I think you saw broad movements in both financials and healthcare today that reflect that.
Small caps also were exceptionally strong today.
Well, as we're in a kind of a precarious environment in the world, because 40% of the sovereign debt outstanding has a negative interest rate. And now we're offering a higher interest rate. So we're going to become a magnet for capital, which means it's a stronger dollar. So if you look at the S&P 500, almost $1 and $2 comes from overseas. So the large caps are really going to be hurt by the strong dollar, whereas the small caps tend to be more domestically oriented.
Huh. So.
Yeah. So have you one of the things I saw about the observations of markets, what happens at the end of the year stocks and the beginning of the year stocks, was that larger stocks are doing better the last quarter of the year, and smaller stocks do better in the first quarter of the year,
mm-hmm.
as they now have a brand new year to look at their targets, and they start getting excited, and they look at smaller stuff, but they take less risk towards the end of the year. Well, that could help. Saying the small caps are still doing better, that kind of goes against that grain.
Yeah. Do you expect anything dramatic? You think this market's going to continue to rally through the rest of the year and on into next year?
I think that there's going to be a realization that there's potential for growth in sectors that have not seen a lot of growth. Manufacturing did very well. Industrials did well today. So we're setting the stage for sectors that were underperforming to do well, that are related to finance, to manufacturing, and to energy. So that's a positive. I think that you know, there's going to be softness and challenges with consumer discretionary. You know, there are companies out there that have already been cited in the campaign process for antitrust. And that's in a number of companies. And so I think antitrust is going to become an issue greater than it has been. I think
Wait, what do you mean by that? You think the Trump administration will come against companies for antitrust violations?
Yeah, I do see some historical parallels to Teddy Roosevelt and Trump with regards to the orientation towards antitrust.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of companies?
I don't want to get into specific company names.
But I'm just saying, what kind of industries?
Well, media, for one.
Media.
That's clearly been cited.
I think he would just do that just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
After the way they treated him, I mean, I'll tell you.
But if you look at what we've done, it's across the board, because we've overserved ourselves on cheap debt. So what do you do with cheap debt? Well, you go and buy your shares back, and if you reduce the number of shares, it looks like the earnings are going up, but it's really just financial accounting changing. We're calling it financial engineering. And then we allow other companies to buy one another. And so what happens is we've been destroying white-collar jobs, and we have these energies, which, you know, some of them drop down to the bottom line. They make the earnings look a little bit better, but they have nothing to do with job creation, especially in the 40-hour period on a weekly basis. And so there's and airlines, for example, would be another case. If you go back 15 years, we had 15 different carriers. Now we have 4 carriers with 85% market share. There are so many industries where it's no longer competitive. It's more like an oligopoly where you just have a couple of competitors. You know, look at Baltimore. You know, I personally live in the city. I have no choice on my cable provider. And, you know, how much does Comcast invest in customer service and issue resolution? I personally don't think a great deal. And I would love to have competition where I could choose. But in the city, there is no land-based competition.
Yeah, well, that's a good topic. We could talk a while on. Right now, I got to take another pause. When we come back, we're going to talk about trade and inflation and so forth. But right now, we got to take a pause. We're going to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. 75% of adults agree they could benefit from advice and answers to everyday financial questions from a professional. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications and learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com, drewtig.com, and follow us on Twitter at the FinCon for educational updates. And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Niall O'Malley, and Niall is giving us his take on what's happening in these markets. Wild ride, you know. We've had some unprecedented, you know, I told you what I was going to talk about. Now I've got a new question for you now. So you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've had some unprecedented moves in the stock market this year that we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So at the beginning of the year, we had the largest decline ever in the month of January, including all the Januaries during the Great Depression when the market went down 90% over 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was unprecedented. We had this giant move after Brexit, not only in the stock market, not as huge in the stock market, but the British pound had an unprecedented move on the downside. We had 9 days in a row down last week, and that hadn't happened since 1980 in our stock market. And now, all of a sudden, we have this move of 8% down during the night and up 2% and then finish 1.25% up at the end of the day. We had the Mexican peso down, what, 9, 8, as much as 10% one time during the day. It ended up down 8%. And then we had this bond market move that we were talking about. These are, like, wild. I've been in this industry for 35 years. I've never seen stuff that's, like, happening this year. What's going on? A wise one. Obi-Wan.
I think it's a very interesting market. There's, you know, we're in transition change from one regime to the next. You saw it in today's market reaction with fixed income pricing, and the fact that the 10-year went up approximately 11%. You know, we're trying to figure out how to dig ourselves out of this hole. You know, we say the Great Depression for or the Great Financial Recession, excuse me, with regards to 2008. But there's similarities and you know, there's parallels between what was done to try to get us out of the Depression, and then, you know, the market stalled in 1937, and there's a lot of similarities right now, and there are powerful dynamics. And I think what's happened is you have populism as people in Europe and here, as people seek to try to preserve job opportunities. And, you know, technology is partly to blame for this. But it's harder to create jobs, and there's a lot of unease because of the job dislocation. And it's trickled over into politics. And now the question is, you know, how can we create incentives for investment so that we correct ourselves in a positive way?
Yeah. So one of the questions I said that I wanted to ask you about before the break was trade. Okay. And I really loved it. I saw some of the leaders of the world comments today. So a lot of these leaders were saying, you know, like Brin said, if Trump we're not even going to invite him to our nation, you know. You remember? And they said, you know, and France, Hollande said some horrible things. And so, but now everybody comes out and says all these wonderful things. We love America. They're our best partners. We're going to work together with Donald. The only country that said something bad that wasn't a bad country like Iran was France. If you saw Hollande's statement, it was not very complimentary.
No, I just saw the president of Mexico just said he just encouraged the U.S. election process.
Yeah. So the point that I want to make now is that one of the things that the markets were concerned about was all of Trump's comments about trade. Mm-hmm. And that he was going to, you know, do away with NAFTA, and he's going to not the TPP's out of here and so forth, and in just Trump manner, you know. Markets didn't like that. Do you think he's going to do that kind of stuff?
I think he will, but I don't think it will happen immediately. I think it will be very much focused on putting together stimulus, working with Ryan for tax reform. And that will be the core focus. And once the funding is locked in, once Trump is pre-approved for his mortgage for stimulus, then I think it will move to trade.
Right.
And I think that will actually be quite contentious when that occurs, because we have reinforced since the 70s presidential powers, and he can actually engage without Congress. But I think he will also be very respectful of the fact that, you know, he, at the end of the day, his communicated statement is that he wants to do what's best for the country. And there are deep flaws with our trade deals.
See, yeah, now that's what my point has been, is that I'm a free trade kind of guy. And I've never believed that what Trump was saying is he doesn't want free trade. I think what he's saying is that our trade deals have always been under this liberal philosophy of I make a deal with these poorer nations, a deal that's negative to the United States but positive to them, which will then lift them up economically, and that will end up being good to the United States. What Trump's saying is, no, we're the 800-pound gorilla. They want to do business with us. They're going to have to open up their market, and when we do that, it will actually be beneficial to both of us. I think that's what he's saying. What do you think?
I think it cuts both ways. I think you have to remember that, you know, the United States, we feel like we're important in this country, but, you know, we're not even 5% of the world's population. 95% of the world's customers, from a population perspective, are outside. You have to think of the balance. I think that the biggest problem is we have not had tax reform for decades. And the dislocation where you have incentives for companies to move intellectual property to Ireland, to Zug, to other places, is totally detrimental.
What was the second country he said?
Zug in Switzerland is a tax-free zone.
Zug.
And
I haven't even been there.
If you haven't been there,
go ahead.
No, I think it's staggering when you think about our leading pharmaceutical companies leaving and reincorporating in Europe. When you think about waste management companies leaving the United States to incorporate in Canada, you know, these jobs, these treasury departments, these research departments, marketing departments, the supply management departments, you know, they should be here in this country. And we should not allow ourselves to lose these jobs. And I think that there's going to be a concerted effort to level the playing field to make it not disadvantageous. You know, there's a company that we're familiar with, that's eBay. You know, they brought back $9 billion, but they paid $3 billion in taxes. And so to level the playing field, and I think that will enormously help investment, and will also bring back that $3 trillion. And if you create channels and incentives for investment that captures just a third of that $3 trillion, you now have an incentive program, a stimulus program that's not on the books of the U.S. government. It doesn't incur additional debt that could be bigger than the stimulus program we had in 2008. And that's remarkable.
Now, the bond market has this huge move. And mm-hmm. bond markets are predominantly focused on inflation. Do you think the bond market is saying, hey, we think that there's a high probability inflation is going to come roaring back?
I just think you finally see registration that there is a large scale interested party in actually making investment in the United States, which is going to likely come through the federal government through President-elect Trump.
Yeah, but at the same time now, you know, Japan has done all these big infrastructure things for the last umpteen years. It hasn't helped them at all. Their interest rates are minus 0.07% on the 10-year. And yet they've done all these big infrastructure deals. Why would that work more for us and not for them? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just asking you a question, well, even though I say it in an Italian forceful way.
They haven't reformed. And, you know, we need to reform ourselves as well from a regulatory perspective.
We need to get rid of Dodd-Frank, number one.
It definitely needs to be overhauled.
No, got rid of.
Because
that's
overhaul. You missed the operative words there, Niall. Gotten rid of. Go ahead, try it.
They're largely speaking, getting rid of large chunks of Dodd-Frank makes sense. There are some aspects that are positive.
Is he running for office next?
But,
go ahead.
There's actually the Treasury has a financial oversight office that actually does some really interesting and important market research to help us understand how to make the capital markets work. But you know, Dodd-Frank is a challenge. The department.
All right, Scott, I'm going to make your mic hot.
Performance challenge. You know, how do you increase productivity when you have a rule that the Department of Labor suggests will cost over its implementation period over $10 billion and 57,000 work hours? That doesn't increase labor productivity. And then we also have case law that goes across all 50 states to a prudent man standard that's actually a higher standard than the Department of Labor standard. And all we need to do is cite that.
Oh.
So
you got to hold on with me now. We're going to come back. Time flies when we have a good show, you know? Anyway, we're going to take our last pause with traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Personal finance has become a major area due to the increasing dangers of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283, or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at drewtig.com. That's drewtig.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Yesterday, all the Democrats were long
I was going to say, I was just wondering if you're going to break into song there, Drew. This is your guy, Paul McCartney. We're into the last segment, Drew. We've got just 10
Don't
minutes
Don't waste the time
or less.
Singing. Get back to the show. Niall O'Malley is with us, Blue Point Investment Management. Now, one of the great fundamental investment researchers that I know, especially here in the Baltimore area. And now, what is it that the average person out there should be looking at? You know, should they be worried about markets up, markets down, or should they be doing something different?
Well, I can give you how I approach it. Each person has to approach it in a manner that's consistent with their beliefs and also their risk tolerance.
What you just said is probably the most important thing that any investor can learn. You have to have beliefs. They got to be sound principles that you believe in. And once you have them, they got to be deep convictions so that these market moves don't scare you away from what you believe.
But what I do is I focus on fundamental research. So, but the first stage is, if you take the S&P 500, there's now 11 sectors. There used to be 10. Which ones have potentially sustainable opportunities, and where are there positive drivers, such as the fact that interest rates might go higher for banks? Where are these positive drivers? Where do they exist? Do they demonstrate sustainability? Where are we valuation-wise? And then once I identify the sectors, then I look at individual companies. And, I've been very fortunate since I started Blue Point. I've worked with over 50 research interns. I have three now that are really high caliber. And it's been a pleasure. And, I've received in the last couple of weeks, five requests from students from Loyola. I've received requests yesterday from Johns Hopkins. I've received requests from Towson University.
Didn't you used to teach at Hopkins?
No, I used to teach at Towson. So I used to teach Towson. The securities course.
Okay.
Securities valuation and equity analysis.
Chris and I are Towson's our alma mater.
We're there. Yeah. We're there, Niall.
Yeah, and we remember when you were a professor there.
Yeah, well, I was a part-time in the evening, adjunct professor. And thank you
You're
very
so
much,
older
for your
than
smart
I.
compliment.
I'm betting he's a couple years younger than we are.
I bet he's more than a couple years. How old are you?
46.
Yeah. He's more than a couple years.
No. Actually, I got to be honest, 48.
48. He's still 11 years younger than me and 10 years younger than you.
That's a true story.
So I guess you weren't our professor, but go ahead. So what kind of drivers do you see right now? What kind of things should you be thinking about fundamentally?
I think there are core challenges with the large cap companies that have been dependent on financial engineering, repurchasing their shares, borrowing to purchase their shares. Guess what? Interest rates are going up. That's going to be a drag. You also have the M&A, which makes them look better, but they're not investing; they're actually extracting rather than creating. And so I think large cap, and you throw on top of that the dollar being stronger is going to be more challenging for them. Some of these large caps, like Coca-Cola, you're approaching 70% of revenue from overseas. That's going to hurt them. And so I think mid caps and small caps have real opportunities. I think that, ETFs are going to play a role in this market. They've benefited. They've gravitated towards the larger cap companies. They've been inflows towards larger cap companies. They're sediment based. I think that there's a potential for money coming out of the larger cap companies. And if you look at, companies and you do, one minus ETF participation, those are the companies that I think are quite interesting.
So here's one of the more interesting concepts that's going to happen right now, and that is you've got Republican, Republican, Republican. They can pretty much do what they want to do right now in the House, Senate, and the executive.
If they're
branch.
Smart about it, right.
If they're smart about it, but they're going to do it. They're going to do it.
Something's going to be coming out, sure.
Here's the number one thing they're going to go after. They're going to go after the Affordable Care Act.
Sure.
But they know they can't just go in and say, yep, it's over. You just can't do that. Now, What do they do? What do you think they're going to do? You know that Dr. Carson has been big time in his saying that that's the area he wants to address. And I think Trump's going to give it to him to some degree. Trump's actually talked about a single-payer system.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think he's going to do?
Well, Ryan has the blueprint. I mean, he already has things. They're putting legislation together on a plan for repeal and replace. So it's just a question of whether Trump says, okay, Paul, do what you have. Let's see what you have and just roll it out.
What do you think is going to happen?
I think you're going to move to a system that is not state-centric. I think you're going to move to a system that's country-centric. And you're going to have a system that of insurance coverage that encourages competition on not 50 individual markets, or in some cases there are sub-markets within the states, but broadly speaking, and there's been enormous amount of consolidation in the insurance companies, and some of the consolidation efforts have been halted by antitrust. I think that once you introduce that competition, and you also have to create incentives for participation, because insurance only works if everybody gets insurance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work if only sick people get insurance. And so there have to be incentives for small business to participate. There have to be incentives for younger people to participate. And more importantly, there have to be incentives for doctors and preventative care. We wait way, way, way too late. You know, what is the justification for spending 60% of lifetime medical in the last 90 days of somebody's life? I get totally lost on that one.
Well, that's the key issue with healthcare, is that the statistics of how much money is spent on a person in the last 2 years of their life is mind-boggling. I think I've heard the statistics that over 90% of all your medical expenses will be paid in the last 2 years of your life. And when I've watched what some clients and their families have done, and the expenses they'll put out with people with all kinds of dementia and Alzheimer's and so forth, and you got to imagine that it's hundreds of thousands of dollars that's being put out, but it's a very emotionally charged issue. It's probably the most complicated thing you could ever imagine.
If I used to work in health insurance before I came to Baltimore in 96, and in the New York area with Medicare and Medicaid and commercial in the tri-state area, if I had one wish, if I could do something to change this outcome-wise, I would ask that when anybody becomes eligible for Social Security or Medicare, that they have to choose between 10 or 15 living wills, and we take the obligations off the doctors, and we make cognitive decisions before challenging events occur. And it's staggering if you look at many urban markets, you know, if you look at the codes that are used to charge for billing, they're called CPT codes, current procedural codes. And in many cases, three of the top 10 will be for ventilators in hospitals. And that's, to me, not a quality of life.
Right. Well, it's a complicated issue. You know, all areas of finance are all driven by supply and demand. Mm-hmm. The problem with healthcare is there's an unlimited demand. Period. There's an unlimited demand. Everybody wants everything possible to stay alive for as long as possible, no matter what it costs. But there's a limited supply. It's a very difficult issue.
But it's also we can manage ourselves better.
I totally agree with you, but you know that's where the complication comes in. So anyway, now we only have about a half a minute left. Tell us more about yourself, your company, how to get in touch with you, how to read about yourself, some of the things you're doing.
Sure. I just finished an article for the 2017 Baltimore Business Review, come out in January. It's something that's done through the CFA Society of Baltimore, which reaches out to open to individuals and people in the finance profession, and it's basically sharing of information and knowledge and best practices. And the Baltimore Business Review is in its eighth year, going to be doing an article on infrastructure investment in Baltimore and the history of it and where the opportunities exist.
Tell everybody how to get in touch with you.
Blue Point is based in Towson, and bluepointim.us.
Give it again. You never give it just once, Niall.
Oh, all right. www.bluepoint, I as in investment, M as in management, period, U.S.
All right. Anyway.
He doesn't just do that to you, no. He does it to all guests that come out.
We appreciate that, no. We appreciate you being with us. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.